Episode 2, Creative Coding and Archive in the Metaverse. This episode, we explore the questions and complications of the metaverse with Kaken, a cross-dimensional collaborative group whose practice merges the physical with the digital by building online worlds. We also hear from Jasmine Morris, who is a creative computing artist and educator. Kaken joined the Somerset House Studios community in 2022 and will create a digital commission for Somerset House whilst in residence. Welcome to the Echoic Archive.
Not too long ago, children and adults alike would spend hours in arcades playing the latest video games on giant machines, with two-dimensional characters performing very basic moves like move left, move right, jump, punch. Not too long after that, game consoles were developed, turning those giant machines into ones just small enough to sit in your living room or, if you were lucky enough, in your bedroom. Today, we have game engines that allow the creation of entire worlds that look almost as real as our own. This, coupled with developments in virtual reality and augmented reality technology, mean that gamers, coders, artists, and everyone in between can explore the innumerable possibilities outside the boundaries of the real world, if they have access to the right equipment. Many people see the creation of these new virtual worlds as a means to escape the oppressive structures in today's IRL society. But if we do that, what or who will we be leaving behind? And once we've crossed over to the other side, how will we archive our moments of joy in these new digital worlds?
My name's Hannah, but I work collaboratively with Tanya Cruz and Isabel Ramos, and we're collectively called Kaken, or Kaken's like the entity. We work with a lot of collaborators too, so I guess it's like it's us, but it's also more fluid than that. Kaken means experience in Japanese, and that really has underpinned the whole of our practice. It's pretty good because we came up with a name at university, and it's really been grounding us since then. So, we, you know, whether that's exploring the nature of consciousness or whether that's pushing the boundaries of experience, that's really what's integral of about our practice. So we work with installation, performance, gaming engines, games, films, coding, just like, yeah, you name it. A lot of the work that we've been manifesting has really been about the metaverse and world building, building these alternate dimensions and really creating the stories. Like, we like to be the architects of the future. We like to be the architects of the metaverse. My personal experience of gaming is really like, so I grew up in the countryside, but at the tip of Cornwall with my Japanese mother and, you know, my brother. And we literally grew up in emptiness, just in nature. So like most of my gaming experiences are actually imaginary games, really. Like that's where it's kind of, I think all of us, like, we're really interested in dreams and we're really interested in seeing life as a game. And I think that's, so like we do, you know, for example, I would say someone like Kojima is like really one of the most kind of inspiring game developers that we, Hideo Kojima, yeah.
Some of my earliest experiences of gaming involved me watching my older brother sit and play the Metal Gear Solid series. Metal Gear Solid is a stealth action game series written and directed by Hideo Kojima. For me, the Metal Gear Solid series was so captivating as its graphics just looked so much realer than any other game that I'd seen at that point. And its story was grounded in real historical events, but it took a science fiction detour. Speaking of detours, let's get back to Hannah.
It's like, you know, he's done some really interesting, innovative things over the years. Like, I think he, at some of his games, there's like points where to be able to like continue on the game, you had to change the plugin of where your controller was, and you had to like another one to like a secret part was like you had to turn the disc over and like something to do with it. I don't know. There's some really cool like weird performative things that he's done. But to be honest, even like with games, a lot of the time it's like, you're trying to like think about the gaming structures that exist, and often even just things that aren't even, that aren't necessarily conceptually interesting, but the actual structures. For example, something like Hitman. Like, Hitman has a really interesting gameplay because it really feels like you're in an open world dynamic, because when you go closer to the characters, you, certain stories unfold, but the environment, the mission is very, you kind of only know that you have to, I guess, like, kill one, assassinate, like, somebody, but actually the way in which you can find out how to get to that point is so open and free. You really feel like you have that autonomy. We're inspired by games and game structures, but I would also say that we're really inspired by life as a game and really conceptualizing it like that. I guess, like, if you think about role-playing games, when you're a child, you play imaginary games to enact what you want the future to be like. And that's kind of like, we're still doing that. That's what we do. We, like, role-play, we create simulations, trying to imagine what the future would be like. Like, our favorite thing really is to create immersive installations, and we just like the bigger the better, and we really love creating these, like, we like creating magical kind of gaming experiences, interactive immersive experiences that often, like, rather than creating a metaverse that people inhabit, often we're creating, like, what kind of stories and worlds would exist and what kind of avatars would exist, rather, and what kind of technologies. So it's not like necessarily like something like Decentraland or, I don't know, Second Life or something like that. It's more about us thinking about, well, what sort of worlds would happen, like what sort of characters would exist and what sort of dynamics would happen, what sort of structures and what technologies would get us there. For our commission with Somerset House, we're really looking at how, rather than physical space being physical and the digital being digital, is that it's swapping it around. So imagine you're playing a game, but the game is the physical and the digital is the everyday.
My name is Jasmine Morris and I am a creative computing artist and educator. My creative practice and teaching practice are really closely aligned. Often it's kind of criticising technology and the tools that have been created and the experiences that have been designed, and looking at practical ways to respond to them and to try and make things that we are confronted with a little bit more diverse. I have the privilege of working with higher education students across two institutions and running a lot of workshops and working with a lot of different people with a lot of different technologies and creating a lot of cool stuff. I would say that's me in a nutshell. If I was to expand on this idea of rewriting narratives through code, I mean, it's a kind of like refined way of saying something a lot deeper. So that was the name of a talk, and it was kind of like a bit of a slogan, I guess. But what I really mean by that is, so rewriting narratives, a lot of tech is given to us. Even the name, like the word user, implies that we are going to use it. We're not collaborators and we don't have any agency over the experiences that we're having. It's quite oppressive. And I would love it if we were encouraged a little bit more to be collaborators or designers and to write our own experiences, or at least be in charge of that, especially when it starts to like inform some of the societal, like political issues that we're facing. So what I mean by rewriting narratives is encouraging people to start to write their own things, be that through code or just designing experiences, or even just having critical conversations and thinking about this and understanding that you don't have to sit on the outside and be a user. Everyone should have the right and privilege to get involved in the conversations and be like designers themselves. So that's kind of what I mean by that, if that makes sense. My first memory of gaming, let's get super nostalgic and emotional, because why not? My first memory of gaming is the Nintendo 64. And those of you listening that know this console, I know your heart's going to be beating fast right now because it is such a special console. I've always been a Mario gal. Ironically, I'm really scared of games. I don't play any of the violent ones, any of the ones that have got too much of a rush. It scares me, you know, I'm not good with that stuff. So Mario and Nintendo in general has always been a safe space for me. I like the bright colours. I like the friendliness. I love the fantasy element. I remember, like, if I'm to speak about this particular period in my life when I was playing with this Nintendo 64, bear in mind it was probably a little bit outdated, but it was a hand-me-down. So by then, there was probably... PS1 was probably out by then and stuff, but I was still playing with this really archaic piece of tech, which I guess probably still now, like, informs my approach. I'm a big believer in archaic technology and how, like, we can use it in really interesting ways even today. And now I'm, like, saying this out loud, I'm wondering if there's a relationship there. I probably bought myself my first game, because by the time I was buying games, I was probably working. But when I was gaming as a kid, they were hand-me-downs from my granddad. So he had this 64, and we just had a few games on it. We had the Mario game, we had Doom. Again, anyone that remembers these, I hope you're as gassed as me. Doom was amazing. Obviously, I was terrified. Had to play that one when my mum was in, but it was cool. Few racing games, and I was happy with that. I really was. I'm an only child, or at least I was, like, brought up in a, like, single child household. So I spent a lot of time gaming on my own. I mean, often my mum would be, like, sat in the room, but she wasn't necessarily gaming with me. And then as soon as I got my Nintendo DS, shout out to those as well. Yeah, I mean, I'd spend hours, but it's so funny, you know, I would spend hours on, like, Animal Crossing or, like, interior design games or, like, Sims. I've never been a, like, you know, like, super intense, too much going on. It just overwhelms me. I really like chilling and gaming. And now my practice is really broad, and apparently I'm an academic, so I have all of this research and I'm very theoretical these days. But initially, you know, my creative practice was a response to how alienated I felt whilst gaming. I feel like when I was really young, it was going over my head. And then as technology developed as well, so as avatar creators got more expansive and as 3D worlds got more expansive, and I didn't see marginalised identities moving along with that, I kind of noticed, and I've always kind of questioned this idea of, like, recreating oneself in a game. And of course, I could argue that it's not important and that we don't need to look exactly like our physical selves. And I'm super open to that. However, if said someone can fully recreate themselves and I can't, that's where I feel it becomes a problem. So I'm a big fan of games that are trying to do something different. And, you know, maybe we are, like, manifested as entities, or maybe we're playing as animals, whatever, cool. But if, you know, the dominant identity in society, for example, like a cis white male identifying character, can go right through to the stubble and the this and the that, and I can't even find...
You end up playing a white man with black skin.
Exactly, right? And it's weird. Like, that's not okay, you know? And I made a piece of work actually called 50 Shades of Brown, and it's a response directly to that experience of something that's so political in the real world, like the colour of our skin, whether we want it to be or not. To us, it's normal. We're born with it. We come out like this. But as soon as we step outside of the home, it's a political thing. So for something that holds so much weight and so much value in society, to have it be decreased to some sort of weird shade of brown on what looks like a white person's body is, I would argue, traumatizing in some ways. And I think it should be the opposite. I think it should be liberating, which is why I still have hope for tech. I'm not a utopian. I don't ever think that the world is going to be perfect. And actually, like, friction is okay. We're human. But again, it's more this complete, like difference in experience between, like, I guess, the black body and non-marginalised identities. New game, loading. Ambient music and text-based narrative set the tone. Loading. An avatar, slightly bouncing, appears on the screen. Whose avatar? A presumption is made. A male presenting figure stares back at me, bouncing. The instant drive to recreate my body swarms me. Tab after tab of alterations and editing options surround him. My thumbs dance around the controller, considering and selecting. I begin the godly process. The Adam and Eve-like shift from male to female is simulated. A female protagonist is born. I stare back at the third version of myself, but there's a strong disassociation between me and my virtual represent. I'm defined by a character assumed by someone other to me, currently a slim, brown-haired, white, female-presenting avatar. I admire her appearance whilst I take the journey through the interface of modifications. From blush olive through to caramel, sweet dark honey to sweet dark chocolate, the bitter struggle of resisting categories begins, becoming embodied in countless renditions of myself until I find my sweet spot. Virtually simulating my flesh, my melanin becomes a series of binary numbers, a grouping of tiny brown pixels, and the quest through the endless menus continue. Versions upon versions are created. I watch my virtual body shift from slim to fat, and I wonder about an existence beyond these boundaries. I settle for the slim build with tits the size of watermelons. My hair is a collection of ringlets, some moisturised to perfection and some left to create a halo of frizz that surround my head. Medium length beach hair will have to do this time. Each delicate strand of my tangled mane becomes a block of poorly rendered mush. Eye shape, eye height, eyeliner, eyelash, eye colour, cheek inflation, cheekbone height, cheekbone width, cheekbone sharpness, cheek colouring, forehead wrinkle, forehead height, jaw width, jaw angle, chin forward, chin depth, chin circumference. My thumb caresses L2 as I alter myself time after time. Nose height, nose scale, bridge width, bridge length, nostril spacing. A series of scroll bars and selections slowly allow me to regenerate. And like a flower from a blood, I blossom, and Princess Jasmine is born.
Get ready for the next battle.
Reading the news, scrolling through social media timelines and talking with friends, one word kept coming up: metaverse. But nobody could give me a direct answer on exactly what it is. So I decided to ask Hannah and Jasmine.
So a metaverse, I guess it's at the moment it's used as a buzzword to kind of explain the speculative energy around the future of a digital space, so beyond cyberspace, something that is more interconnected and immersive, so not just Web 2.0, Web 3.0. So that, in some senses, is the metaverse, but the metaverse that we talk about within our within our creations is this space that, yeah, pierces the reality of all that we know. It defies everything. And it's really about imagining like what kind of future technologies could exist, what kind of worlds, realms. We really want people to be fulfilling the things that they actually desire. So the systems exist. So for example, if Facebook creates a metaverse, which Facebook is Meta now, like imagine living in a metaverse owned by Facebook and you're immersive. That means your interaction with your child is somewhat controlled by Facebook. Like if you live in their metaverse, your home is theirs. So when you go into the metaverse, say if you go into VR, you are essentially placing your consciousness into a different realm. And that is a spiritual act. Like your consciousness isn't something that can just be explained through science, because no one can define it properly. They don't know what it is. It's a mystery.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I have to say is that language is really important, right? And the fact that Facebook have renamed their data stealing company to Meta, and we now are going into this realm of Web3 or Metaverse or whatever you want to call it, and it aligns so closely with this big tech company, for me, it's concerning. So we saw it happen with Zoom and online meetings in the pandemic. So we now will say we're going to jump on a Zoom, even if we're not using Zoom, right? It kind of became the term for all online meetings. And I feel like, unfortunately, the same has happened with Facebook being called Meta and what the metaverse is and what it represents, which I think is problematic. Facebook is Facebook. And yeah, they're going to do things in Meta just like they've done things in Web 2 and Web 1. But Meta, the metaverse, if I'm to give it my definition, and who am I to do that, but I will share it with you anyway. For me, it just represents, the next stage of technology where we're starting to see a little bit more immersion, a little bit more collaboration, multi-user experiences, because they were really hard to code and get going back in the day on the machines that we had. And now, near enough, everyone's machine is powerful to, facilitate that. So we're seeing a lot more, real-life immersive things. For me, I would say the key word is immersion. But it's really just tech advancing on a little bit, just like how we saw a shift from desktop to, laptop and smartphone. And then suddenly we could have this thing with us all the time. We're a bit more attached to it. I guess it's just the next step now. And the fact that we don't need VR headsets anymore to be in an immersive VR space. A lot of them allow browser access now as well, which is really cool. Of course, we're going to see more examples of this. But that's all it means to me, I guess, is space and maybe a little bit of a stronger link between our real life experiences and our digital ones. But I am the opposite of a fearmongerer. We are all still very real. The real world still really matters. And in my opinion, where we're at now, it doesn't matter how far into this metaverse we get. We've still got a lot of work to do in the real world.
It really just depends on who, what sort of metaverse. If you come into our metaverses, the Mansbury ones that you create, it's made by artists. It's made it with completely different intentions. We're really thinking about our metaverse in a very spiritual, whole, full-bodied way that's connected to nature. It's a safe space. We can only imagine the metaverse being another version of the Earth. But actually, the problems that are going to entail in the metaverse are going to be much more different than that. So, for example, when you go into a virtual space and you're all different avatars, what is race in those spaces? It's going to be completely different, the way that we conceive identity. What happens when you have certain technologies that allow us to be transhuman? What happens when we have technologies that allow us to be in multiple spaces at once? It's very hard to deal with yourself as one in one vessel, but maybe it will emancipate us. What happens if we don't have a body in the metaverse, but we're floating between realms? It can be anything that we want it to be. So maybe we'll go to see the sunrise in the metaverse and there'll be two suns that we see rise at the same time. Or maybe we end up in a Meta with Facebook and Meta controls our happiness. We are the future architects, but we really need to be able to imagine it and see way, it has to pierce the reality of all that we know. It has to defy what exists. And I think we as the people, and also we as from the grassroots upwards, we can really, create those spaces. And we have to approach it in a way where for something to exist, it can exist even in your head and you can manifest it in some way into existence. Things don't just happen through, I'm going to make this and then this is the outcome. Things happen in mysterious ways. So we just got to, keep trying and believing and sowing those seeds, I think.
So my thoughts on this idea of a metaverse being an escape I mean, that's a deep question. It's so interesting because looking at tech as an escape route or digital experiences is really interesting in itself. First of all, you know, what are we escaping from and why? And that, I guess, would sit at the core of, like, this thinking or this research. The first gaming addiction centre has opened in the UK now. Again, I'm not fear-mongering. It's just a fact. It's cool. We're humans. We get addicted to things. We've been doing that for centuries. We just have a new thing to get addicted to now, right? So it's calm. However, it's a comment on how clearly tech or gaming more specifically is facilitating escapism in people. Because I guess what is at the core of all addiction is probably escapism, right? And again, I still think we need to, as a society, you know, this is my kind of like community utopian head on a little bit now, but we need to really look at why people are wanting to escape rather than jumping into the tool that they are using to escape. Because as I said, we're all still here. We're all still real. For now. No, I'm joking. So I've spoke a little bit about liberation. And I think that if it's allowing you to live a life that you wouldn't usually be able to live, and it's a liberating experience, and it's a personal experience, and it's doing good for your mental health or for your development or whatever, or just allowing you to exist, go for it. Escapism isn't bad.
Escapism is something that everybody desires, but often escapism is something that is... often it's a very like unsatisfactory act. So for example, watching reality TV to escape, but that's often to like numb your mind so you don't have to think as much because things are stressful and you need a quick way of relaxing and it's instant and it's easy. I think a lot of people want to escape from their reality because reality is difficult. Like the possibility of perceiving reality is zero. Like, there's no way that you can see reality as it is. And so, like, the equation of it is actually zero. Like, it's impossible. You cannot see. Because seeing reality is very hard. So I think people want to escape and people love to live in their fantasies. But often to create those fantasies that really fulfill them is really hard. And I think people will get trapped in the metaverse. I think people will neglect their body. Like, people have already, you know... people do already, like, they think about their Instagram body rather than their physical body. And that's, like, I think it's a really tricky place to be because it's very hard to look at yourself in a very kind of objective way and really, like, even looking in the mirror, straight in the mirror is quite a intense thing. Like, you know, people have to often build their confidence to look at themselves and really face, you know, what is it that I could improve on? What are the things that really would make me happy? They're questions that we ask every day and then we forget and then we're thinking about what food we're going to eat and then we're, you know, whatever. It's like, I think the reality is that we're not going to be able to go to a digital space and feel more fulfilled unless we change the laws and structures that exist. Yeah, what's going to end up happening is people are going to escape into the metaverse, into these corporate spaces that don't fulfill them, but will disconnect them from their like full potential of using all their senses, because we are five sense creatures. We aren't just visual and language and spoken. Like, we're not just like we heavily rely on our visual, and well, not everyone, but you know, a lot of the technology is very ableist. Like, you know, most of it is using a limited amount of our senses. It switches us off, escapes us into a place that we're not really wanting to be in. And I think when it's going to be immersive, it will trap us in a way that we won't know how to go back and find ourselves again. Yeah.
The debate around leaving the real world for the metaverse is very complicated, and you can decide where you sit on that. But this is a series about archive, so I had one final question.
How do we archive joy in the digital space? That's a design brief there. Love that. So let me put my critical hat on first and say, can we archive our joy? Because if we ain't being represented correctly in there, how can we archive our genuine joy? So again, not to be a broken record, but to go back to my point about how we need to be able to realise our full identities, no matter how complex they are, especially if other people can, in parallel, to even start to think about archiving joy. And at the moment, I'm not sure that we're there, but just to kind of put a lighter angle on it, because why not? It's coming together and maybe creating our, be that whoever you identify with. You know, we all have our communities. We all have loads of different communities. I think it's coming together in cyberspace, understanding how we can like exist there, and I guess bringing it back into the real space. Just to touch on what you said around, could you maybe suggest that those that can't access the most emerging technology due to probably finances, let's be honest, or potentially location. But I kind of like that, because do you know what? Let's keep them here and let's get them designing things instead of becoming like, I guess, like a slave to the system. So actually, I'm not too mad at that.
Thanks to Kaken and Jasmine Morris. This episode is produced, sound designed, and narrated by Waylon Mackenzie Witter, with introductions by me, Laurent John, and additional music by A. Chibs and Yomi Bello. The Somerset House podcast is executive produced by Eleanor Scott.